This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. At root, the concept of human rights seems like an easy thing to grasp. But in practice, it's more difficult. What may be human rights violation in one country might be protected in the legal code of another. So are human rights utterly subjective? National Humanities Center and RTP is weighing in on that subject with a multi-year project called Human Rights and the Humanities. It's going to bring together academics from around the world to look at the question of human rights. Do we know what they are? Can we say how they're different from other rights? And who's the final arbiter in deciding if human rights have been violated? We have Jeff Harpham, who is the president and director of the National Humanities Center, and he joins us now. Welcome, Jeff. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
So when I think of human rights, I think of a kind of legal question or public policy question, and here is a Humanities Center weighing in.
Exactly. Well, the term human rights is a historically recent construct, and it's a very equivocal or ambivalent term. The term rights suggests that there's some legal apparatus in place, that it's a legal concept. But of course, laws are products of governments and constitutions and legal codes, and the term human rights speaks to a kind of rights that are independent of legal codes. So the concept cuts in both directions.
And you say that, in fact, the humanities played a large part in even developing our sense of what human rights are.
There's a whole school of thought that says that the concept of the rights of man, which came about in the French Revolution, was built on a prior development of artistic forms such as the novel, such as painting. And that the humanitarian movement in the 19th century built on this. It was the period of the realistic novel. Goya was an important figure in this respect. And in contemporary terms, I think that our modern understanding of human rights is really activated by the kind of imaginative engagement that you get in novels, in plays, in series of photography, in videos, and in films.
All of that said, human rights is also a legal concept and a controversial one. I mean, what do we know about human rights or the controversy over it? When did we start talking about it legally?
Well, this itself is a controversy. In fact, there's an entire field of history called human rights history that's developed over the last 10 or 15 years. And virtually nothing in the concept or the application of the concept is uncontroversial. If you ask what are the origin of human rights, you get an immense range of answers. There are injunctions to justice in Leviticus. The Stoics talked about something like human rights. Some people point to the medieval concept of natural rights. Some people say that the Enlightenment was the source of it. I just mentioned the French Revolution and the humanitarian movements of the 19th century. You could say that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948, one of the first things that the United Nations did, was the turning point. But one of the speakers at our conference on Friday will be Samuel Moyne of Colombia, who has made the very controversial claim that the term human rights, as opposed to the concept of human rights, didn't really get any traction until the late 1970s. It was really when Jimmy Carter made the point in his inaugural address that human rights was going to be a cornerstone of his administration, at the same time that Human Rights Watch was formed, at the same time that Amnesty International was formed, that this is the time when, in common speech, human rights became very prominent in a way that it never was before.
That may be the time that it rose in prominence, but as Jimmy Carter, it becomes a case in point of how difficult it is to execute, because very quickly the national priorities of the United States of America came in conflict with the international rights of Iranians, to name just one group. It seems to me if there's a foundation in human rights, it is something that transcends national borders, and that becomes a hang-up for us.
Well, that's a good point. It not only transcends national borders. You could argue that the concept of human rights, as it emerged after 1948, was explicitly intended to cut across and to undermine national sovereignty, not, to be sure, the national sovereignty of the victorious Allied powers. They had no intention of giving up their empires, at least willingly. But the powers of the formerly colonial nations and other nations that were, shall we say, non-modern or non-Western, human rights really undermines the concept of national sovereignty. And as you pointed out, Iran is just one of the areas in which human rights claims have been lodged against a sovereign nation for tolerating or actually perpetrating human rights abuses.
So tell us what's going to go on at the conference.
Well, this is not a conference where we're going to be encouraging passionate denunciations of human rights abuses. It's a scholarly conference. Our guiding premise is that the concept of human rights is an inherently conflictual and complicated concept that can really only be understood with the help of humanistic scholarship, history, study of the arts, and philosophy. And so we're going to bring together scholars from all over the world over the course of our 3 years at this conference on Friday. We're going to have scholars from Israel, Austria, the Netherlands, Duke, UNC, and NC State, of course, and seven other scholars from around the country. And we're going to be talking about the historical and the philosophical and the cultural dimensions of this problem.
Well, it's interesting because when you look at the imaginative, the artistic renderings of this concept, certainly art has a bigger appetite for paradox and complexity than the law, which would like things to be much more discreet in its description. So it certainly is a fine way to get at it in some ways.
Well, what art does is it brings it home to you. The concept of human rights is pretty abstract. It's a very cosmopolitan concept. Nobody starts out with an intuitive understanding of it as simple and transparent as it seems like it might be. And also the reports of atrocities or abuses that happen elsewhere in the world to people very different from ourselves doesn't always command our excited attention. But through art, it can. I mentioned Goya, but there's a whole tradition of human rights fiction. Sometimes included in that tradition are Upton Sinclair's The Jungle or John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, or more recently Coetzee's Waiting for the Barbarians or Michael Ondaatje's Anil's Ghost, Toni Morrison, The Bluest Eye. All of these document what we might consider crimes against humanity. Picasso's Guernica might be considered a great instance of an artistic dimension of a depiction of a human rights abuse. There have been a photographic series about Hiroshima that brought it home in a way that the mere description simply could not. There are film series all over the world called human rights film series, literally all over the world. And what these do is they bring home to you the emotional immediacy of a situation that would be easy to overlook. And there's another way in which this happens. The digital media today presents us with images and accounts of things that happen far away. Every day, the leading stories on the BBC News this morning were concerning Human Rights Watch identifying the government in Syria is placing landmines in civilian areas, and Amnesty International detailing forced detentions in Sri Lanka. The leading stories. So we get accounts of these all the time. The Kony 2012 video that has received 80 million viewers, and watching the numbers on YouTube is like watching the death clock run. 80 million viewers on YouTube in a very, very short time details the activities of something called the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda, committing what we would call human rights abuses. And if you read about them, it's one thing. But if you see people with their ears chopped off or their lips chopped off or other kinds of mutilation, children being conscripted as sex slaves or as soldiers, it presents you with a kind of emotional demand
those
that you cannot deny.
Those depictions, though, can come across through straight-ahead journalism and kind of nonfiction. Seems to me another – so there is an artistic depiction of an abuse that can, as you say, access this emotional dimension and move people to action. But also it seems to me that art can take even one step back and give us a picture of what it means to be human. Some of the fundamentals of the human rights movement, what the individual is, who the human is, and whether or not that human is only human if they have a national identity or if you could subvert.
Well, it's an excellent,
all of that happens, seems to me, outside of journalism.
Excellent point. Journalism follows the story, but art follows the fortunes typically of individuals in their dimension as individuals. And human rights has been praised and criticized because it focuses so exclusively on the sufferings of individuals. This is actually one of the most controversial features about it. There are those who say on political grounds that the emphasis on human rights is completely misguided because it leads you to focus on the fate of a tiny group of people. Meanwhile, you're distracted from the fate of much, much larger numbers of people. And some people say that we ought to be focusing on enlarging the scope of freedom or strengthening the sway, extending the sway of justice, rather than on alleviating the suffering of a few hapless people.
These are the kind of nuances that can probably be best explored through fiction and other kinds of art.
That's right. That's right.
So tell us a little bit more about the conference. It is not just a weekend conference, although it starts this weekend.
Well, over the years, the center has become known for mounting big, ambitious, extended, multidisciplinary projects that take up subjects of general importance and train the bright light of scholarship on them. And this is the latest in that series. This will be a 3-year project, and it'll be anchored by annual conferences, the first of which starts actually Wednesday night at the center with a keynote address by Elaine Scarry of Harvard University at 7 o'clock, followed the next day by the conference itself. This will be an annual event. There will also be occasional lectures. And most interestingly, we've arranged with Michael Gillespie, who's a great political scientist at Duke University, to construct an online resource, a pedagogical resource for those who are interested in teaching about human rights from a humanistic perspective. That is not a legal perspective, not a policy perspective, but a humanistic perspective. Because right now there are programs in universities and colleges all over the country in human rights, but they tend to be cited in law schools. So we're going to provide a template for the teaching of human rights from a humanistic perspective.
Public invited to the conference?
Absolutely.
Jeff Harpham, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Jeff Harpham's president and director of the National Humanities Center First Annual Conference on Human Rights. And the Humanities is going to be at the National Humanities Center in Research Triangle Park this Thursday at 7 o'clock and Friday at 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. For more information, go to nationalhumanitiescenter.org. Just ahead, reliving the 1963 trial of Nelson Mandela on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.